Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Dr. Anita Finnegan, the CEO and founder of Novalea, which is headquartered in Ireland with operations in Boston, Massachusetts. Anita, thanks for your time, and let's go and get started, please.
Thanks for having me, Robbie. Great to be here.
Thank you. Well, looking at your bio, you know, we did some background snooping on you on LinkedIn and Google. You have a very deep background in medical device cybersecurity. Can you tell us how you got into the subject area?
Sure. Well, I guess I came to this subject area later in life. So I spent 18 years in industry working in engineering roles in safety critical industries such as the automotive and even construction. I was actually working in the construction industry during at the time that the economic crisis hit, and here in Ireland that was hit quite hard. So it was up to me at that point to choose a different route for my career. I took the option of upskilling, returned to education, did a postgraduate in software engineering, and within the Irish university that I attended, there was a specific research center that focused on healthcare and medical device software process improvement and performance. And actually, the director of my software engineering postgraduate course was also the director of that research center. So he had persuaded me, although it was unplanned, persuaded me to embark on a PhD around the area of medical device software within his group. And I got into that a few years ago. Actually, my initial PhD research was focused on something different. I was looking at verification and software of healthcare and medical device software development practices. A few months into it, I heard whispers on the grapevine around cybersecurity becoming an area of interest in the medical device industry. And at that point, there's very few people working on the area of medical device cybersecurity, particularly from a research perspective. So I enjoy a challenge and felt this was a great challenge to get stuck into. And I switched my topic around to cybersecurity for medical devices from the research center. And that was it. I went about developing a methodology to allow medical device manufacturers demonstrate some level of confidence in the security of their connected medical devices.
Wow, excellent. Well, it sounds like you've had a very, you know, very rich and diversified road to the path of where you're at now today. Now, how did Novalea come about? Obviously, you're the co-founder, so you must have had some say in starting the company. But what led you to start it? What were your creative juices that led you to create it? Can you give us some more background into that, please?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Follows on really nicely from the previous question. So really, Novalea fell out of my PhD research. I had realized a couple of years into developing the methodology for medical device manufacturers that there was commercial potential around this. It was very evident that there was a market brewing, that cybersecurity was going to be looked at more closely by regulators and policymakers. And with that, then the Irish government awarded me funding. They awarded me €300,000 to essentially take the manual methodology I developed during my research and convert that into an automated process or software to commercialize. So I did do that. I was awarded the funding. I hired a team. We developed the software to automate the risk management piece around cybersecurity. We did that for 2 years. And then essentially Novalea was licensed from the Irish University a number of years later.
How did you get the name Novalea? It's a very unique name.
Yeah, so Novalea actually means Nova. We assume Nova to be guidance, so it's generally a star that gets very bright. So we take the meaning as guidance. And Lea is lean, is an acronym, Lean Evaluation of Assurance in Healthcare.
Oh, wow. Okay, excellent. Now, how long has Novalea been in business? I mean, how big is your team? Where is it based at? You have offices both in Ireland and Boston. Can you share a little bit more into that, please?
Yes. So Novalea was founded. I licensed the IP for my PhD in 2016. So we're just over 4 years old right now. We spun out of the Irish University. We grew from June 2016, a one-person organization, to today we are 23 people. Most of our team are software engineering, development, testing, machine learning specialists, and most are based out of our offices in Ireland. So we're based in Dundalk, County Louth, Ireland, which is halfway between Belfast and Dublin, for any that know the country. And we also have operations in Boston, like you said. So really what we have in our Boston office are sales and customer liaison roles.
Okay, excellent. Now, I've been to your website, and I'm looking at it right now, actually. You have a number of unique services and products, but the one thing that really piqued my curiosity is the Select Evidence. Could you please elaborate more into that and how it's used in medical device cybersecurity?
Sure. And Select Evidence is our first offering, our main offering within the organization. And we describe Select Evidence as an expert cybersecurity risk management platform. So what Select Evidence does is it allows manufacturers of connected medical devices to risk assess their products from a cybersecurity perspective. There's a lot of decision-making capabilities built into the system. So it essentially, that's the expert piece. It essentially guides manufacturers through the processes of doing these risk assessments. And I'll give you some examples. For instance, if I am a manufacturer of a medical device, we'll say an infusion pump, I have a makeup of a bill of materials, components within that device. I would upload that software bill of materials or that components list into Select Evidence. What Select Evidence does then is it identifies all the known vulnerabilities associated with the components within my infusion pump device. It will then take me to a further step within the risk assessment process, and it will recommend what mitigations or security controls are required to actually eliminate or reduce the risk around those cybersecurity vulnerabilities. So it actually has those decision-making capabilities. We developed the system in light of the fact that in the medical device industry, and in fact every industry, there's a significant shortage of cybersecurity subject matter expertise. So we wanted to develop this system that had that expertise or would behave almost like a consultancy as a service, so that regular software and system engineers could essentially perform the same work as a cybersecurity subject matter expert. So it takes care of that whole aspect of performing a product security assessment during the development of a product, but then also once the product goes into market. And when I say it goes into market, that might mean that the product is embedded in the human body. It's sitting on an IT network in a hospital environment. Our platform will continuously monitor the product for any new vulnerabilities and will ping the users, the medical device manufacturers, when something has been identified, and will also alert them to the mitigations or the controls that need to be put in place. So it's essentially a 24/7 continuous product cybersecurity assessment platform for medical devices.
Okay, excellent. Now, why is cybersecurity such a hot topic today in the medical device area?
It is such a hot topic. There's lots of media out there around cybersecurity and cybersecurity-related issues. But I guess it really all stems from the transition of the technology over the past decade or so. So if you look at the medical device industry maybe 10, 15 years ago, it was an industry of standalone devices, standalone medical devices. But over the years, we've witnessed a huge surge in connected medical devices. These are devices I mentioned, insulin pumps, infusion pumps, imaging devices, any device that has wireless capabilities or any device that sits on IT networks, we've seen immense growth of usage of these types of devices. Now, this surge in that technology innovation really overcame the need to actually assess what new risks are we introducing if we place a device that was traditionally standalone and place it on a network. And unfortunately, the security requirements to do that and do that safely weren't actually considered, or at least they weren't considered adequately enough. So that leaves us in an industry of insecure connected devices. And there are security researchers out there that will claim there are no medical devices that they cannot access unauthorized in an authorized fashion. But the industry is relatively new, which makes for a hot topic. Essentially, we haven't heard about cybersecurity risks or hackings prior to 2008. The first hacking was from Dr. Kevin Fu in the University of Michigan in 2008. He hacked a pacemaker, but that was done in a very controlled setting. A few years on, another security researcher, Jay Radcliffe, at the Black Hat Security Conference, he actually hacked in front of an audience while presenting to him, hacked his own insulin pump. So he was able to gain backdoor entrance into his insulin pump that gave him administrative rights. And at that point in time, eyebrows were being raised in the industry. Questions were being asked, is this something that we need to look at more closely? So in the U.S., the Government Accountability Office conducted an inquiry into the FDA's consideration for cybersecurity-related risks in 2012. And they essentially concluded that while the FDA had looked to some degree at potential cybersecurity risks, it wasn't done adequately enough. So this got the FDA's wheels in motion to set out some guidelines, some regulation around performing product cybersecurity assessments for medical devices. But since that time, even before the regulation, for instance, in 2013, the first ICS alert was issued that was associated with medical devices. And what that particular ICS alert highlighted was something like over 300 medical devices that had hard-coded passwords in them. And they identified these from over 40 different medical device manufacturers, which was really concerning at the time. So shortly after that, the US FDA, they published their first guidance for pre-market cybersecurity regulation for medical device manufacturers. And then very swiftly on from that, they published a subsequent guidance, which is, that was published in 2016, which is a very, very quick turnaround for guidance documents and for FDA publishing this. But the 2016 guidance related to what medical device manufacturers need to do once their products are actually in the market. So we call this our post-market cybersecurity guidance. And it's with this guidance that it's really the heavy lifting for medical device manufacturers. It's where the responsibilities and the onuses lie in terms of ensuring that you develop secure medical devices, but you also maintain that they remain secure throughout your life cycle. So a lot has changed. It's been quite aggressive. Like I said, it's a relatively new industry, an industry in its infancy, and it makes for a lot of media around the topic of cybersecurity.
Excellent. Now, you have alluded to one topic here called the IOMT. Can you please exactly define what that is? And what is the value of that connectivity? Obviously, it must have to do something with the Internet of something. Can you please elaborate on that in more detail?
So IoT, again, another hot topic. We make a derivation of that in the healthcare industry, and that is Internet of Medical Things. So it's connectivity, medical devices that connect to the Internet, connect to cloud devices for data storage. Now, there's huge benefit with this, as you can imagine. So connecting medical devices to networks and to patients is becoming a huge business. And if we try and size that, it's estimated that the IOMT, Internet of Medical Things, the market itself will be worth around $140 billion this time next year. What's truly exciting about the benefits of IONT is what it offers doctors and, more importantly, patients. So firstly, IONT offers faster and much more accurate diagnoses, more efficient delivery of healthcare services, and obviously reduced costs. It's just a few benefits to IONT. The technology enables virtually any medical device to collect, analyze, and send data across the internet. And then not only can digital devices such as heart monitors be connected to the internet, but so too can non-digital devices like non-traditional digital devices like hospital beds or even pills. So essentially, IONT lets medical equipment and healthcare products share data in real time, which has everyone who has a legitimate need for that information benefits from that significantly. So if we look at the breakdown of where you find these applications, two major uses in hospitals and in the home. So as you might expect, hospitals and clinicians are the greatest users of Internet of Medical Things. And because of IONT, they can improve healthcare quality while reducing the cost, and it's a very attractive business model for hospitals. So you can see why the adoption is great there. But patient monitoring is not the only application of IONT in hospitals and clinics. So for instance, imaging devices like MRIs or X-ray machines, CT scanners, they can actually be remotely monitored for performance issues. And long before a hospital becomes aware of any issues, the manufacturers or the service vendors of the devices can detect issues and they can correct those remotely by updating the software. So GE, Siemens, Philips, they would be companies that would use IONT for remote diagnostics and preventative maintenance. In the home then, IONT is certainly extending healthcare services beyond the walls of a hospital. So remote patient monitoring is growing significantly, and it essentially enables patients that are suffering from chronic diseases to avoid frequent visits to a doctor or to a hospital. So cardiac patients and diabetics in particular can benefit from remote technologies. So remote devices can monitor patients, their heart activity, their glucose levels, and it can automatically alert their clinicians, their doctors, if there's a problem. And they can also be administered any boluses of insulin, for instance. Also for elderly patients, virtual home assistants are definitely on the increase. They're extremely valuable in that the devices will interact with the patients to remind them when they need to take their medications, etc. So as you can see, there's a lot of benefits with connecting medical devices. It lowers per patient costs. It improves the healthcare business model. Per patient implementation, we see large improvements there. But overall, it ensures a more accurate and faster delivery of healthcare, both within the healthcare environment and outside.
Wow, I didn't realize that there was an Internet of Medical Things out there. Wow. Now, I've written a couple of blogs, I think, in the past about hacking of medical devices, especially liking the pacemakers. And I find it totally reprehensible that anyone would even think of doing that. Why would somebody want to hack into a medical device or healthcare IT network? I mean, why would anybody want to endanger someone's life like that? And has anybody been harmed like that you know of?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's something that always comes up. It's actually a very difficult thing to prove. But so primarily, the concern in the industry is not necessarily right now about hacking a medical device to cause harm or in the form of an assassination. Like we saw, if you saw the TV series Homeland, the president's pacemaker was hacked and that resulted in a fatality. That's not the most major concern at this point in time, although if that sort of hacking did start to happen, yes, it's a major concern. But right now, what we are concerned about is the security posture of IT networks. And very often, the medical devices sitting on an IT network in a hospital are deemed or viewed by hackers as the weakest link. And they can be used to launch network malware attacks. And we've seen plenty of evidence of this happening over the last number of years, in particular in the last 8 months. throughout this pandemic, there has been a surge and a spike in ransomware attacks to hospitals. And obviously, the negative outcome there is if a hospital network is taken down, none of the medical devices are available. And of course, there are patients depending on those for life-sustaining delivery of healthcare. So that's our major concern. Now, up until 3-4 weeks ago, if I've been asked about anybody being harmed or fatalities, the answer was always there is no known case of a fatality due to hacking of a device or a healthcare IT network. But that changed. It actually changed when a group of hackers breached a network in Dusseldorf. It was part of a university. The hackers had assumed that they were only breaching or taking down, this is a form of ransomware, taking down the university part of the network, but they had also taken down the emergency department, the hospital emergency department at the same time, unbeknownst to themselves. What happened in that particular incident is that there was a patient that was in the hospital at the time who needed immediate emergency care. And because the network had been fully encrypted, was unavailable, including the devices on the network, actually resulted in the fatality of that patient. So we have our first known case where somebody has been harmed by a hacking of a healthcare network.
That's too bad. Now, how has this industry evolved over time?
The industry has, well, I've touched on a couple of points there. So it's certainly from a technology innovation perspective, it's evolved hugely. Regulatory perspective, yes, regulations are now in play, particularly in the US. But one of the things, the key areas that I have felt real change or real evolution is around the expectations of all of the stakeholders in the industry. So one challenge for the healthcare and cybersecurity of medical devices is the fact that it's quite a siloed environment, quite a siloed domain. So let's stay with the US. In the US, FDA govern medical device manufacturers, HIPAA govern healthcare providers. So they have different sets of rules and regulations that they need to adhere to. But one of the major transitions that I've witnessed is the coming together of those two stakeholders. The attitude to assume all things cybersecurity, we will take an approach of one person's attack is another person's defense. Healthcare providers, medical device manufacturers, security researchers, white hat and black hat, regulators have all come together to be able to enhance the cybersecurity posture of the entire domain. So they all have a common goal. And for instance, one way that this has been truly witnessed in the industry is through the evolution of information sharing analyst organizations like HISAC, for instance, where medical device manufacturers, healthcare providers, security researchers will report any known vulnerabilities associated with particular device. And as a consortium, they come together and they identify resolutions for mitigating any risk or at least eliminating the spread of the exploitation of the vulnerability. So to me, that has been the greatest transition in this industry, seeing it de-silo with collaborative approaches for the greater good of enhancing the cybersecurity posture of an entire domain.
Okay, excellent. Now, what kind of cybersecurity regulation are you impacted by? I know that there's the GDPR, the CCPA, and there's HIPAA. Out of those three, or if there's even more that I'm missing out there, which ones have the most impact for you and your company?
Well, those that have had the most impact are actually what I've mentioned earlier, the FDA's pre-market and their post-market cybersecurity guidance. So now guidance does not sound like something that is very mandatory, but it actually is in fact mandatory. So for all medical device manufacturers developing or selling a connected medical device, they must follow these guidance documents. Just to put that into some perspective, the FDA publish their guidance documents, and they actually state within the guidance documents that they are non-binding. And the reason for that is when a guidance document is published by the FDA, they are setting out one methodology for performing medical device cybersecurity risk assessments. Manufacturers have the opportunity to do something different, but they would need to tell the regulators, to the FDA, that what they're doing is equally or better than what FDA suggests. So for that purpose, it's always important to clarify a guidance document by the FDA is actually mandatory. It suggests one methodology for performing product cybersecurity assessment. So that has been the most impactful to Novalea. And essentially, when I was developing out the product and our team were developing onto the product, the objective was to be able to allow medical device manufacturers fulfill each and every line item as set out in the regulations for pre-market and post-market cybersecurity risk management. And that has been really what has grown the company to where it is today. And it's for that reason, it's the most concerning area for medical device manufacturers is to be able to demonstrate and to do it with evidence that they are actually conducting cybersecurity assessments on an ongoing basis. Now, the FDA were certainly the first movers in this space with their regulations, but this has been growing geographically quite aggressively over the last few years. And we've seen Australia, Canada, and actually here in Europe, we expect the new medical device regulation to come into play in May next year, which will have the first cybersecurity regulations set out to medical device manufacturers.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are the expectations of hospitals and other medical providers when it comes to medical device cybersecurity? See, I'm a heart patient myself. I had bypass surgery about, 8 years ago. So would my cardiologist be held responsible in case I had a pacemaker and I became the victim of a cyber attack? Would his office be held responsible for that, or would it be the hospital he's affiliated with? How does that chain kind of work? What's the chain of accountability or the chain of responsibility?
Yes, in terms of responsibility agreements, there is a chain, and it comes via the medical device manufacturers have responsibilities, healthcare providers have responsibilities, global purchasing organizations have responsibilities, also to do clinicians, do insurance companies. So it's quite complex. If you want to take it back to the roots, medical device manufacturers, they need to set out in motion plans to be able to, as I say, continuously monitor their products for new vulnerabilities. If a new vulnerability is identified, they must report that to an ISO like HISAC that I mentioned or FDA. They need to put into motion a plan for patching and mitigating the risk around the vulnerability that they've identified. But they also have responsibilities, which we call coordinated vulnerability disclosure responsibilities, to alert healthcare providers, clinicians, global purchasing organizations of the issues or the vulnerabilities associated with those products. Very often, and we've seen a case happen a number of years ago with an Abbott product, where there was a recall of almost 500,000 medical devices, embedded medical devices. And the result of that was the recall required all patients that had the devices implanted in them needed to visit with their clinicians, and the clinicians were able to form, via a wand, a firmware update. So the responsibility lies with all stakeholders across the entire domain. But I will say that providers and global purchasing organizations, their expectations in terms of knowledge around the cybersecurity posture of a medical device is increasing significantly. And they are putting more demands on medical device manufacturers. So we have almost like an RFI, a request for information style of document in the industry. It's a standardized document known as the manufacturer disclosure statement. And really what this document, it's a questionnaire that healthcare providers would request manufacturers to complete during the procurement process of a connected medical device. And that questionnaire outlines the types of security features, you know, if a device has the data is encrypted, if it has person authentication, node authentication, malware detection abilities. Manufacturers will be required to complete that so that at least then healthcare providers could assess the suitability or the fit for a particular device for their particular environment. And this document is at the MBS2 was actually revised last year. I was actually part of the Canvas group working on it. And there's larger scope within that document now. In fact, healthcare providers may ask medical device manufacturers for the software bill of materials, so they can ask for the makeup of the medical device that they're about to take in. And the reason why they may want to see that software bill of materials is so that they can scan resources like the National Vulnerability Database, for example, to see if there are any known vulnerabilities associated with those connected medical devices. So if we compare the consideration of cybersecurity with healthcare providers today versus 10 years ago, it has grown 10, 20 fold. And they want to understand and they want to better assess the suitability or the security posture or maturity of a device before they procure the device into their environment because of their responsibilities to their patients.
Okay, wow. Now, one question I want to ask, here in the United States, people, when they procure a medical device, they always use the default security settings set by the manufacturer. They don't actually adjust it to their own security requirements either. They just don't know how to do it or they just forget about it. Do you always tell your patients and your other colleagues or whoever that you may work with to always make sure that those settings are set to your environment, to your security requirements of your patients or your medical practice?
So that all relates to whatever the intended use and the specifications that when a medical device manufacturer builds a product, they have to think about a few things. They've got to think about the ideal environment that that device should sit in, the security requirements that should be built into the product, the intended use of the product. And, you know, they advise healthcare providers around those particular areas. So, for instance, if a device was developed that needed to sit in, say, a closed-loop network or a segmented network, it would be for the medical device manufacturers to advise healthcare providers of those particular security requirements. But then, of course, there are additional bolt-on network security platforms that exist out there that essentially bolster the security settings already developed into the product. I do believe that at a certain point in the future, because we are transitioning from in-hospital patient care to at-home patient care, that the dependency will all be on building security into the product. So it won't be a bolt-on feature. There will be no reliance on the security of the network that the hospital sits on. The onus will be on the medical device manufacturers to ensure that nothing outside of the environment of the particular device itself can harm a patient.
Okay. Now, how are cybersecurity requirements regulations worldwide? For example, are there a lot of differences between the United States and Ireland or the United States and the European Union? What have you been finding so far in your work?
I would say, as I mentioned, the US FDA led this entire space. They were the first movers to set out some regulations, best practices, for improving the security of medical devices. And there were a lot of standards and a lot of best practices developed out of the U.S. In fact, I authored two of those particular standards. And because there was so much work done in the U.S., what's become evident over the last few years is that over the last couple of years, 2 years max, is that the countries that are implementing regulations around this are taking the lead from the US FDA, which is a positive thing in that it can allow medical device manufacturers to standardize the practices for securing medical devices. And although there will be slight variations between different geographical regions, one example I'll give you is in Canada, the pre-market cybersecurity guidance is very, very close to what the FDA's pre-market cybersecurity guidance is in the US. In Australia, they approached it from a slightly different angle or from a larger angle, if you like, in that they didn't just, in the regulations, they did not just set out requirements to medical device manufacturers. They combined all stakeholders into one regulation. So it's setting out requirements for the medical device manufacturers, for the healthcare providers, but also for the patients. Other than that, Australia probably would go beyond the US FDA guidance most. But even here in Europe, we see that certainly with the guidance documents that have been created here in the last 12 months, they are taking the lead from the US FDA.
Okay. Now, obviously, 1 year ago, if you were to start asking about COVID-19, nobody would have thought that it would have had the global repercussions that it's brought on today. How has this pandemic, and for that matter, even the remote workforce concept, what kind of changes has that brought about to the medical devices industry, and how has it impacted you and your company, Novalea?
Yes, it's been a whirlwind this last 8 months with the pandemic. From a healthcare delivery perspective, we were already on a way on the journey to adapting telemedicine and telehealth, but we've seen the healthcare industry under significant pressure of being overwhelmed by COVID-19 patients. More demand for COVID-only related products like ventilators, etc. And the general fear of patients that were suffering from non-COVID-19 type illnesses, the fear of those patients to actually go into a healthcare environment. People stayed away from hospitals. They didn't want to be exposed to the virus. And what all of that has done is it's put a greater demand, or at least a much more aggressive need for transitioning the delivery of healthcare from the hospital environment into the family home or into the private home of a patient. So the patients don't need to be in the hospital environment. There will be no fear if we can do this, if we can administer, treat, and diagnose a majority of illnesses outside of the hospitals, the fear of overwhelming ICU units in hospitals won't exist. So that was one aspect. Telehealth and telemedicine, I believe that it is going to get quite a lot of attention over the coming years to ensure that we are never in this same position again. I also think that, from our own perspective, the company's perspective, we certainly had, you know, we're an early stage company at the very beginning of the pandemic. We didn't know how this was going to affect us. Now, all of our customers are manufacturers of elective surgery devices. And so the need and demand shifted from elective surgery devices to, like I said, the COVID-19. But that only lasted for a while and it wasn't of any major concern or major impact to our business. But it still put a lot of strain on elective surgery device manufacturers in that if they weren't manufacturing ventilators, etc., they were hit from a financial perspective. So the budgets shrank, team sizes also shrank. And what we noticed was the reliance, or the openness, I will say, for medical device manufacturers to outsource the product cybersecurity piece. It's a much more affordable option. But what really surprised me was the confidence in medical device manufacturers to take such a sensitive aspect of product development and outsource that. So we've seen a huge growth in that, and that's been pretty beneficial for the company as well. And overall, the industry on a 12-month turnover basis won't be impacted to a huge degree, or will be as it was predicted or forecasted for the end of the 12-month period. But the biggest thing that we have noticed is the need to transition from in-hospital healthcare delivery to at-home through the use of telemedicine and telehealth.
Okay. Excellent. Now, who is your typical customer? Are we talking about big hospitals, small ones, just medical practitioners individually, just patients? Can you kind of give us a gamut of who you're trying to target?
At the moment, with our existing technology, Select Evidence, all of our customers are, and we specifically target tier one companies, they are all manufacturers of medical devices. So our product supports manufacturers developing products before they get into market, and then supports the manufacturer while the product is in the market by continuously monitoring the product so that manufacturers can update that, their medical devices. That's where we started. Now, the future for Novalea, we understand, and I've mentioned this, that there has been aspects of this industry that is fragmented, although the industry is working very hard to de-siloing and implementing more collaborative approaches to designing and maintaining better products from a security perspective. But for us, the obvious next step for us will be to work with healthcare providers and global purchasing organizations to ensure that they can adequately understand that the devices they're putting into their networks are suitable, they're of an adequate security assurance level, and that they are getting all of the information they need to get from medical device manufacturers when it's required in terms of updating and patching those devices. So at present, we are just medical device manufacturers, but our future plans are to expand into the other aspects of the healthcare delivery by targeting the end users of devices.
Excellent. Now, where are your customers based at? Are they mostly in Ireland, or they're on a global basis?
No, so our business model has always followed the U.S. side of things, the U.S. regulation. As I mentioned, the U.S. FDA were the first to put process procedures of a mandatory basis in place for medical device manufacturers. So that was our initial target. We targeted the U.S., we targeted tier one medical device manufacturing companies, and we established our operations in Boston. It is one of many medical device hubs in the U.S. So that's the majority of our customers. Yes, we do have some customers based in Europe. They are sister companies of U.S.-based companies, but for the most part right now, all of our customers are North American customers, but we have a plan to expand in line with new regulations geographically over the coming 12 months.
Okay. Now, back to your service, the Select Evidence. Is that a SaaS-based product available in the cloud, or is it something that has that's more of an on-premise solution at the locality of the manufacturer?
Yeah, so we actually initially developed this product that it was an on-prem solution, but and that was what was widely, the only thing that was widely accepted at the time when we first launched the product. But more and more, there's confidence growing in the use of hosted and SaaS-based solutions. So now we've fully migrated to a hosted platform. And all of our customers that have been using even the on-prem solution now are actually using our SaaS platform.
Okay, excellent. Now, what do you offer for further support when it comes to cybersecurity risk management? Do you take just the approach from a medical device standpoint, or do you take a little bit of a more holistic approach?
We purely concentrate on the medical device itself. Yes, we do actually get asked, and we do lend support in that area about how you consider the business process side of things, the infrastructure within the medical device manufacturers, and how that relates to the actual software and system development cycles from a product security basis. And we do a little of that, but primarily our support relates to the product security assessment. One of the things that, you know, we envisaged this being the case when we just established Novalea, but there's a huge learning curve, a consultancy aspect to selling Select Evidence, our platform. And that's primarily because, and I've said over and over, that it's such a new industry. It's an industry in its infancy. Regulators are learning about this. Standards committees are learning about this. Policymakers, medical device manufacturers. So for that reason, we would spend quite a bit of time with our customers explaining, okay, here are the regulations. This is what it means to you. This is how it will impact your software and system development life cycles. This is how you can integrate the security risk assessment piece. This is how you can integrate that with your safety risk assessment piece. So there is quite a large aspect to our business model is around educating our end users around the product security piece, the regulation, expectations for the coming years in terms of those regulations, and also what information they need to share so that their customers, healthcare providers, are adequately equipped to evaluate the security of their products.
Okay, excellent. Now, what's next for Novalea? I think you've talked a little bit about it, but what's next in terms of your expansion plans and horizons for the next few years?
Yeah, so, yes, I did. I touched on it. So we are currently developing out, expanding our technology and expanding our customer base to develop solutions for healthcare providers. That's something that's already underway. We're a relatively early stage company, so we're literally on the benchmark of scaling the company. So we will be raising money. The investment proceeds will be there to expand our technology base, expand our team, provide us with the ability to expand our presence further into the U.S., possibly the West Coast, but also to new countries where regulation is coming on board, like Australia, Canada, and indeed mainland Europe. So that is the expectations for the next 12 months for us.
Okay, excellent. Now, I just want to kind of touch base on a couple of cybersecurity hot button issue topics here. One of them I want to talk about, and one thing that you brought about was the Internet of Things. I find that to be a very scary topic, you know, like smart cities, smart homes, that kind of thing. I don't have a smart home or a smart car. Do you have anything like that? And what are your thoughts on the IoT in general?
I see the pluses, the benefits. I have some smart home devices. I know the potential weakness of those devices. So as much as I see the benefits, I also fear them. But my take on that is I think all of that will change. And so, for example, here in Europe, I guess where my fear comes from with smart devices is that there is very little standardization into developing these products in a way that they can be updated securely, they can be monitored securely, that the extensive array or the ecosystem that they become part of is assessed from a much more holistic approach. And it's the huge array of devices that can connect with other devices. it can be a frightening thought or a daunting thought because the technologies vary so much. But there has been quite a lot of discussion around, quite a lot of discussion and decision making around how we can actually look at the security of these devices and what actually needs to be assessed with relation to what can be deemed critical. And a couple of years ago, smart home devices really wouldn't have been deemed as critical devices. But when you think about it, you may have a Nest home heating system in your house. If you can breach the Nest home heating system in your house, you can essentially identify when the best time is to break an entry into that house. When is the heating settings off in that house? So for that reason, standards and policymakers have been looking at the broader array of Internet of Things. And I'll give you an example here in Europe under the new EU Cybersecurity Act. There is a call for a certification of some of these Internet of Things devices. And what that would mean is that there will be a standardized form of product cybersecurity assessment that will be required to place these products in the market via a certification scheme. So there will be a seal of approval in terms of, and manufacturers of these products and users of the devices will have an understanding of the security posture of the products. One of the things that fully aware of yet, but I think it's absolutely critical. If there is a call for certification of connected devices, of IoT devices, that static approach to one-time certification, particularly when we're dealing with cybersecurity issues, which can evolve, the platforms can evolve, new threats are identified, new vulnerabilities are identified, new trends, new attack vectors. Certification, one-time certification, will not suffice. So I do think in order to have that level of comfort around the use of IoT devices to such an extensive level in a larger ecosystem, recertification programs, so recertification programs, is absolutely necessary for the wider adoption of those devices.
Okay. Now, artificial intelligence, does Novolia make use of AI in any of your service offerings or product offerings to the medical device manufacturers?
We do. So essentially, what we use AI and machine learning for is that we can predict. So we've developed algorithms that create relationships between the types of threats and the types of security controls or mitigations required to eliminate any of those threats, and also to understand the threat landscape around that. They are all repositories of information that can be broadly identified online. I mentioned one of them, the National Vulnerability Database. But the problem for many software engineers and security, or even security engineers, is understanding the relationship between a threat, between a vulnerability, between an asset, between a mitigation or a security control. So we use AI and machine learning for predicting relationships between those data sets, can deliver the fuller service or the silver spoon service to our customers, and essentially talk our platform up as a consultancy, as a service. It essentially behaves like a human being. If it finds out there's a particular vulnerability associated with your product, it's going to find out the resolution or the solution or the mitigation for that.
Okay, excellent. Now, data privacy, that's been another hot button topic coming up, especially here in the United States, the GDPR and the CCPA. How do you find that in Ireland? Are there big data privacy issues there as well also?
Yes, so in Ireland, with European regulation, we fall under GDPR, which essentially in most countries in the US, anybody that's developing a device and selling that into any European country need to fall under the GDPR. So obviously with medical devices, the transmission of patient health information is considered safety critical information, It's information that obviously we want to protect the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of it. But with the confidentiality, there's a major concern. There's a lot of value in patient health records. And if we consider the comparison between patient health records and, say, credit card records, well, patient health records are worth considerably more than a credit card record. And so for the protection of ensuring that it's not monetized by the theft of or unauthorized use of that information, privacy becomes a much larger thing for the healthcare industry in comparison to the financial industry.
Okay. Now, as we wrap up our show, Anita, what do you think the future will hold in terms of cybersecurity threat landscape? Are we going to see more of the same? Are we going to be seeing different threat variants? Obviously, COVID-19 has had a huge impact on this, but what are your thoughts on that?
I think that the cybersecurity from any industry's perspective, in the medical device industry, for example, we think about two things. We think about three things, actually: efficacy, safety, and now security. And if you think about safety engineering or safety risk management, what you're concerned about with safety is something within the device going wrong that can affect the environment, as in the patient. With cybersecurity, you are trying to understand what can go wrong in the environment outside the device that can affect the device itself, which in turn can affect a patient. So you're dealing with unknown unknowns. There are new technology developments, new and better ways to access products, new ways to hack devices. So it's ever evolving. It is not something that we will ever get to the point and say, well, this is the standardized way for securing devices, because hackers will always be two steps ahead of us. The industry, or any industry, or just in general, the cybersecurity industry, needs to keep evolving with technologies, with ways to build more secure devices, and with ways to be able to demonstrate the security of those devices. So I don't think it's an industry that's going to slow down for a long time. I don't think it's an industry that will ever standardize in terms of the right technology to secure a device. So I see a lot of growth, and particularly as we transition to a world of connectivity, the reliance on cybersecurity resilience is going to be ever-growing.
Okay, excellent. Finally, Anita, as we wrap up our show, what do you think, or what do you tell people, like maybe close family, close friends, what to do to mitigate themselves from becoming a risk of a cyber attack? Now, we all are at risk. Nobody is immune from being a victim, but what do you tell people in general? They go, hey, Anita, what do I do to protect myself? Is there anything that you tell them?
Well, it really depends on what that is. If it's home devices, the networks in hospitals, if it's, from a very simplistic level, it's a security 101. It's ensuring good passwords are used. You don't use the same passwords. This is all from a perspective from home. You're not using the same passwords. The devices that you're connecting to your network at home, they're updated. The latest patches or installs are either automated, but the technologies that are connecting are all auto-updated, so that users at least can be sure that they're working with latest patches of devices, etc. From outside of the home into more safety critical industries, the one thing that I always say is it's a continuous process. You can't develop a product today, even a product today that you deem as being secure, you can't say the same thing about that same product tomorrow or the day after. So in order to be able to assure at least some level of security assurance of devices, it requires continuous effort, continuous monitoring, and also continuous feedback between industry stakeholders. And this is one of the positives that I mentioned I see happening in the medical device industry. It happens in other industries, industrial control systems, et cetera. That sharing of information, even between competing medical device manufacturers, hey, I found this, this particular vulnerability might have an impact. They disclose their vulnerabilities via a white paper, and the industry becomes aware of it. It's not a state of exposing dirty laundry. It's a state of building the cybersecurity posture of entire industries. And that collaboration, that information sharing, that cohesiveness is really what's going to protect users of safety critical devices from cybersecurity related issues.
Well, Anita, we thank you very much for your time this morning, actually, here in the U.S. We hope to have you again on future podcasts, especially as the medical, you know, cybersecurity starts to, you know, take more attention coming in 2021. Thank you for your time once again. We hope to have you again.
Bradley, thanks for your time. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.